Hello and welcome to Ahead of the Curve. This is your host, Jonathan Gellner, and thank you so much for joining us today. This episode of Ahead of the Curve is brought to you by New Era. New Era is the official headwear provider of the MLB, NFL, and NBA. If you love to rock New Era caps as much as I do, then you won't want to miss this opportunity to wear what the players wear and get 15% off when you go to neuracap.com/AOTC and use code AOTC, all lowercase, at checkout. That's 15% off your order using promo code AOTC. On today's show, we have on Brooke Cubs, head basketball coach at Centerville High School in Ohio. Brooke graduated from Graham High School in St. Paris, Ohio, near Springfield in 1995, and following a four-year playing career at Capital University in Columbus, he returned to Graham. He then became the head coach in 2000 and spent 12 seasons at Graham, and in 2012, following his time with the Falcons, including a trip to the state semifinals, Coach Cubs left his alma mater to become the head coach at Centerville High School, where he has earned several Coach of the Year honors while guiding the Elks to multiple Sweet 16 and Elite 8 appearances. His 2021 team recorded a school record 26 wins on the way to the Division I state championship in Ohio for the first time in school history. Brooke is also the author of the book Surrender the Outcome, teaches two leadership courses at Centerville, writes a weekly blog at bluecollargrit.com, and is currently in the process of writing another book, which comes out in March of 2024. So on the show, we discuss installing culture, how to live out and establish core values, and we take a dive into the application of roles and parent advice. You're going to love this episode with Brooke Cubs. Coach Cubs, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Coach.
Definitely. So I talked to you off the mic that you're the first basketball coach that has been on the podcast. And I heard you on a podcast with Ryan Hawk a couple of years ago. And I don't know, like you listen to some people and you really want to gravitate and want to know more about them. And you were that person for me, like one of the few people that I was like, man, like I got to get to know you better. And so you wrote a book, you have a blog. And now you're in, you know, the coaching other coaches business, which I think is really cool. And let's get into. But first off, I want to say thank you because you've affected my coaching style and the things that I do on a daily basis. And we've never even met before. So thank you for that. And I really do appreciate you.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. It's an honor being on. And, you know, I definitely don't claim to know everything or even very much. I think we're all just kind of trying to learn and get better and, you know, just like you said, you hear some people and that kind of clicks with you. Doesn't mean it's right or wrong. It resonates with you. So, no, I appreciate the opportunity to share.
Of course. Well, let's talk about a little bit about what you got into, you know, the summer, and then we'll kind of roll to where we are now. But like summer is a time period that people reflect and they try and grow, they try and dig into resources. So what did this look like for you, this time period? You can go off season to really to your preseason period of adjustments that you're making. And so just kind of talk us through what that looks like for you.
Yeah. So the summer for me, I mean, I enjoy the summer. You know, we have youth camp obviously with our high school stuff. And then I started coaching AAU, which is like a, you know, bad word in most high school coaches, vernacular, sure. But, my son kind of was going through, playing some AAU and playing, pretty high level basketball. And so I coached him throughout all of his AAU stuff. And what I really found out, you know, I coached it this year for the first time without him on my AAU team. But what it does is it steals reps for you. You get so many more, not only in-game reps of stuff, but, you know, the summer ball and the AAU stuff for basketball coaches is like, you get this little tiny window to try to develop trust, get a kid to believe in you, get that kid to believe in himself, follow your instruction, deliver information, whittle your stuff down to the essential coaching points because you don't have as many practices and reps. So it's been really good for me in kind of creating some clarity and really making me intentional about all of my interactions and all of my conversations with the kids that I'm coaching. So that's a big part of my summer in June and July. This summer, I spent a lot of time spending with my son and our family, trying to be together as much as we can. My daughter is you know, graduated and has a job about an hour north of us. And my son just started his freshman year at Indiana. He's playing basketball there. So a lot different at home with us. And so trying to maximize those times together, you know, you talk about it all the time as they're going through and you're like, you know, it really does end and you really want to make sure you're appreciating it when it's there. So
no doubt. Well, I saw that somebody that I follow posted a viral video of LeBron and this amateur kid a couple of years ago. And I was like, oh, hey, I kind of know that guy. And so I tagged you and I was like, this is, you know, his dad's a high school coach in Ohio. And I thought that was like a cool connection. So like, what was that like being around a person of that stature? And then did you get to experience him very much?
Oh yeah. Gabe played with Bronny from fourth grade through eighth grade. So 4 years of summer basketball. I mean, that's a long time to be on the same team. Those things change pretty quick. And, you know, LeBron was around a lot for those. Sometimes he was on the bench with us coaching. Other times he'd sit down kind of in the corner and kind of cheer. You know, probably the biggest thing I got from being around LeBron is just how intentional he is with how he pours into kids. Like, I'm a Jordan guy, always have been, probably just because it's old school, but LeBron is, I mean, his stuff off the court is incredible. I think the impact that he's had and he's allowed basketball to have for his family and for the people around Akron is unbelievable. But those kids on that AAU team that were fortunate enough to play with Bronny, man, LeBron just poured so much into those kids. I mean, it's a whole different deal when I tell a kid like, hey, you know, you can do it, you're good. And when LeBron says, hey, man, shoot that thing, you're the best shooter in the world. And like, it's just a different deal. And he's very conscious of the power of that. And he used it to feel like elevate those kids on that team. And Gabe was a major, you know, beneficiary of that. And, you know, LeBron's, you know, Gabe's still in contact with him. And it's somebody that's just, I always think when I'm talking, you know, about parenting, I always am very intentional about who do you allow pouring into your kids? Because I think that's a really big deal. And, you know, Gabe was very fortunate to have, you know, LeBron be one of those people.
No, I love that. And there was a quote that I actually tweeted it out the other day. And it was like, when you're young, like people like LeBron and athletes are your heroes. And then when you get older, your heroes become the people who pour out to your kids. And until having kids, like I have a 5-year-old and I have a almost 2-year-old. And like that never rang more true to me than when I became a dad. Cause you know, you roll your eyes and do things like that. And whenever you hear coaches, kids and stuff like that. But now I like see it. My son started wrestling. And, you know, it's one of those things that like, he was excited about it. And so we tried it and seeing like them pour out into a kid and like his eyes light up, you're like, okay, like now I see why parents act the way they act whenever they have negative situations too, because they've invested so much into it. I mean, it's hard too. Cause I'm like, oh man, like he's not very good. Like we gotta practice more. We gotta practice more. Like, what if he's not very good? And what if he doesn't, you know, all of the different things that coaches go through, but I'm sure you went through some of that yourself too, like with your son growing up.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah. Trying to figure out that balance and trying, you know, you want it to be their thing. You know, especially having coached, you see the other side of that. And so, you know, really what started off with Gabe playing was just us spending time together. And we spent time together by doing ball handling drills and creating competitions and trying to get more catches with your left hand than you had the last time. So it was always kind of a game and a competition, but more than anything at that age, it was just us spending time together. You know, and then that turned into him really falling in love with the game, which then led to him falling in love with the process to become as good as he could be.
Sure. I love that. And so let's talk a little bit about, you know, this fall and, you know, some of the different things that you guys are doing. I haven't followed you as closely as I should. And I know that there had been some moments that you guys had competed and won for state championships. Cause on the podcast, you had talked about doing that with your son. Like that was a really cool moment. And so you guys, just for the listeners who had never heard from you before, just setting the background of like, you're not just some nobody from nowhere, right? You guys have had a lot of success and, you know, I would really be curious on how, like if you went back and, you know, you started your first year there and maybe you set some things up, but, and this is a question for later, but What did like that first year look like for you? And we've got a lot of coaches that are transitioning into head coaching jobs or maybe new jobs at a different school. And they're setting that up for their seasons now. So what was that like that first year like, if you could go back and go, man, I wish I'd have done this better, or I did a couple of these things that really set the tone for what I wanted the rest of my career here to look like. Does anything come to mind?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things. I was pretty intentional about, you know, when I came to Centerville, because I was at St. Paris Graham, which is where I grew up. I was at St. Paris Graham for 12 years before I came here, and I taught math for the first seven, and I was the athletic director and basketball coach for my last five. And it's a smaller school. We'd have maybe 160, 170 kids in a class. And you know, at Centerville, we'll have 700 kids in a class. So it's a much larger school. But when I came to Centerville, you know, the culture at Graham had just be kind of morphed into who I was, because that I was from there. Everybody knew me. They respected me because of how I did and how I did things there. And they already had a knowledge of how I operated. Here, it was interesting and appealing because I was coming in and I had to intentionally install the culture that I wanted. They were successful here before, had never made it to a state tournament. But it was a good sports school. I mean, you know, they were successful. Football's always been the thing at Centerville. We've got, I don't know, 14, 15 NFL players out of Centerville High School. And so, you know, when I first came in, the thing I wanted to do is I wanted to establish our core values as being the priority. And I did not want to put a ceiling on what we could do. And so, you know, we'll talk about setting goals, I'm sure, at some point in the talk, but we don't set destination-based goals. Everything's a process-based goal. But if you're playing basketball in the state of Ohio, you're trying to win the state championship. Like that, I don't know what else you're trying to do. We never talk about league championships. We don't talk about sectionals and this. Like, we're trying to win the biggest thing that we can win in that. And that's just the way we established it. And I had a few people tell me like, hey, dude, you ain't won the state championship in basketball at Centerville. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and that's fine. Like that. Okay. I'm glad I don't believe that, but you can believe whatever you want. Like, we were just fortunate enough to, you know, we won the guys over and the guys didn't believe that. And that's really all that mattered. You know, the year we won it, we weren't like we had started two sophomores and three juniors, and nobody really expected us. We thought we'd be pretty good, but not like that. We knocked off the three-time defending state champ in the regional final, in an upset, and then, you know, played really well and beat the number one team in the state by 15 in the semifinal, and had a dogfight in the state championship game. But that's how it's supposed to be. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, the next 2 years we lost the next year in the state championship game. We were 29-0, lost the state championship game. And then last year we lost in the final four. So, you know, all of that to say, like, it's really just, we didn't put any parameters on what we could accomplish. Like, it wasn't like, oh, you know, if we could win a state champ, we just start every year. We're just going to try to maximize this team. Like, that's what we're trying to do. And if that ends up being a district championship, great. If that ends up being a state championship, great. You know, I let go of the whole, like, you know, evaluating myself and the quality of coaching that I am when, you know, my high school coach was one of the best coaches I've ever been around. He never won a district championship. So in Ohio, it goes sectional, district, regional, state, as you progress through the tournament. And Coach Z, it was one of the best coaches I've ever been around, and he never won a state title, or never won a district title. And I just remember thinking as we were kind of going through our run, like, man, this isn't even what it's about. Like, there's coaches that have won 5-6 state championships I wouldn't give you a nickel for, and mm-hmm. I would take Z over him every single time. It just puts it in perspective that, you know, it's cool. I'm glad we won it. I'm really happy for the guys that were on the team, but it didn't really validate anything because I was already past that by the time we got to those games. So I'm thankful for that for sure, because that really helped me get some, you know, some peace in terms of my my mindset about coaching and what success really looks like.
Well, I love that. So, you know, you set the foundation. What did the last couple of months now, like flash forward to present day, what did the last couple of months look like for you now? Because you guys are either starting or getting ready to start the actual season. So what did like the foundation of this season look like for you the last couple of months?
Yeah. So we're, you know, our fall's busy. You know, we have open gyms, weightlifting, four-man workouts, which everybody does around here. We do some stuff with our youth kids in the fall, just some fundamental development stuff. Probably the thing that, you know, stands out around here is our breakfast club. Like our guys shoot and work out every morning at 6:15, every morning. And so, I get that question a lot because people have talked about it around here. The first 3 years I was here, we had one player at breakfast club, Joey Weingartner. He's like the godfather of breakfast club at Centerville. Kept coming. Weren't really getting the results. Like we were pretty good. We were okay. His sophomore year, junior year, we were better. Senior year, a few guys started coming with him. We lost in the regional finals. We were good. We beat the team that won the state that year in the last game of the regular season. Then they beat us in the tournament on the way to their state championship. And it was like, oh, okay. All right. Like we can compete with these teams, right? They kind of started thinking like, okay, maybe so. And, you know, like flash forward to today, I mean, we had 25 kids at breakfast club, you know? And so it's just the faithfulness and the consistency of doing that over and over and over and knowing that you're not earning your success that day, you're probably earning it 5 years from now, but right. You got to stay faithful to that process. So the breakfast club is a huge deal for us and probably represents our program as much as anything. Cause like there's like, we work and it's a lot. And so if you don't really love ball and you don't really love working, probably not the right place for you. Like you probably ain't going to like it. You'll probably stop playing at some point just because it'll get old. It'll become work instead of ball.
Mm-hmm. So let's go back to, you know, you talked about the young man that really started that. How did you get it rolling? Because I'll be honest, like setting that up seems like I would be preparing to fail because getting kids up and doing that stuff before school and all of that stuff every day, and you got it rolling. So give me some advice on if I wanted to start doing that, how would you set it up and what are some tips that you'd give me?
Yeah. So we just talked openly about it with our guys. I mean, I first of all, I showed up every day. That's a big part of it. Like the head coach is there. Like I'm right there. And if it was just Joey, then I just rebounded for Joey, or I worked on something while Joey worked out. And then as more people came, you know, then it started bleeding into everybody else. The conversation was always like, your work needs to match your commitment. So you don't take AP Calc in high school and expect to never do homework outside of class, right? So you can't play high school basketball and want to play college basketball and expect to never do any work outside of practice. It doesn't make any sense. And so, you know, the question then is, well, when are you going to work? Well, there ain't a whole lot of conflicts from 6 to 7 a.m. And so that's just how we painted it to guys. So we just tell them, like, if you think you want to play college basketball, I mean, 5 days a week should be an honest expectation. Now, if you just want to play varsity, then I think you owe your teammates, you know, 3 to 4 days a week. Mm-hmm. If you want just trying to make the JV team, 2 days a week is probably enough. If you're trying to make a freshman team, come once, mm-hmm. right? But I think you're teaching a kid a life lesson in helping them understand like your work needs to match your aspirations. Like you can't say I want this and then, you know, work like a slug. That doesn't work. So, and we just kept doing that over and over. And, you know, there'd be some guys, I'd make guys come sometimes and I'd be like, hey, I'm going to put you to a workout in the morning. We did that back and forth a little bit. And honestly, you know, that kind of like coercing them into coming didn't have a lasting impact. Like,
sure.
You have to inspire them if you want the impact to last. And so the goal was always to like get them to want to do it, get them to understand the benefit of it and do it. And now we've got guys that they have no desire to play college basketball, but but that's what the team does. That's what guys on the team do. So they want to, mm-hmm. they want to support the team. They want to be a, the best member of the team they can. So they come every day. So it's a huge part of who we are. I think represents us pretty well.
Oh, that is cool. And you know, that leads us right into your core values, which I, you know, you hear, you see values on a wall and you hear people talk about like core values, and you, like I said, usually it's empty words on a wall. And so what I've stolen from you is like attaching a behavior to it. And we even have like sayings, like things that we say that in regards to that. So rather than saying, hey, you know, ours are toughness, excellence, discipline, and mudita. And instead of just saying, oh, like, okay, what does what do those mean? Now it's like, here's how it means here, and here's how it means in school, and here's how it means in the community. And then like things that we say are attached to that. So we're trying to, I'm almost trying to brainwash them, if that makes sense. But attaching a behavior, like this is what this looks like, and this is what we do here. And I've really stolen that from you. So I'd love to see, you know, how you came up with yours. And the listeners are, you know, on the edge of their seat trying to figure out, you know, what yours are, the behaviors that you attach to them, and then how do you teach them? And I think that those, mm-hmm. you know, once we get there, we'll roll from there. But if you could go into that first, I'd love to.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. That's really cool that you guys are doing that. So this is our thing. I mean, I tell everybody, I tell parents, like, we're going to coach through our core values. And if you don't want your kid to get more tough, more passionate, more unified, and more thankful, they should not play basketball here, because that is what we're going to try to get them to leave our program with. And if we do that, we'll probably be a pretty good basketball team. All right. So tough is for us is positive body language. So tough is positive body language. And our little phrase, our mantra that we call it that goes with that is fight ready. So I think of like a boxer going into the ring, and you know what that looks like. If you're walking in, take a test in social studies class, you know what that looks like. If you're going into a job interview, it's just, here I come. I don't know how good I'm going to be, but you're going to get the best I got. Right. And so that's the mindset we want with tough. And body language to me, you know, like, I just don't think anyone's ever done anything tough in their life where they haven't had positive body language to start it. When I first did these, it was a ton of reflection thinking about what like values, like my dad, it to me was the guy. I always, when I do this with others, I always say, like, who do you admire, and then what characteristics do they have that, like, what makes you admire them? Because you admire somebody for the same reason, or just like you would not like somebody. Like, I don't like somebody because they probably violate my values. Like, they don't align with what I think is right. And you admire somebody because they have a value that you aspire to have. And so when I start thinking about this, my dad is the first one that comes to mind, because never missed work, never complained, like always just did all the dirty work, always positive, like wouldn't let me ever make excuses. And so, like, he's just the guy for me. Like, he's tough, man. Like, he grew up really poor and he never like whined about it. And so, like, that to me, is like the epitome of what we're looking for. And so that fight ready is like almost our reset. Like, when I think of that, like, that gets me back to like the ideal image of what tough looks like. Passionate is our next one. Choosing extra work is the behavior that goes with it. That points straight to our Breakfast Club, which, you know, we've talked a little bit now. It's almost like that's our normal work now. And so, like, how do we expand that and say, okay, what's extra work now? Because everybody comes to Breakfast Club. So we've talked about film and some mental stuff and, you know, things like that. But for that, we talk about stealing inches. And actually, I think of baseball when I think about this, when I think of, like, you know, a pitcher throwing it on the outside edge of the plate, mm-hmm. and then an inch wider, and then an inch wider, and then an inch wider. Pretty soon the strike zone's 3 inches outside. And so we talk to our guys about just, you know, how can you steal an inch? How can we, you know, maybe we run down to the other free throw line. Maybe we get set up on a baseline out of bounds before anybody else. Maybe we, you know, we're in the batter's box ready to swing before the pitcher's ready. Like, we don't even step out at all. Like, we're ready to go. Like, how do we get those inches? Like, in class, it's really easy. Don't get on your phone the last 5 minutes of class when the teacher gives you time. Do your homework, right? Like, how do you steal inches at home with your kids? Well, put your phone down when you get home, when your dad, and you know, get down on the floor and play with your kids. Like, those are ways to steal inches. And so, when we talk to our guys about this, one of the things that we do early in the season when we do our core value stuff and we introduce them every year is we just put a T-chart up and say, tough, not tough, passionate, mm-hmm. not passionate. And we just said, what's it look like? What's it look like at school? What's it look like in practice? What's it look like in our team meetings? What's it look like in the weight room? And we just have an open dialogue about what that is. And it gives me a chance to say, nah, that's okay. Or nah, like this is what tough really is in this situation. So that helps, I think, get some clarity for our guys. Our third core value is unified, which for us is speak and act with urgency. And this one gets a little bit of a pushback from people, but like you can't convince me it's not the right way for us to do it, at least not for me. Because unified for me is the willingness to speak up for what's right for your team. So like one of our cardinal sins is if you see something that you know violates our team like standards and you don't say anything, that's as selfish as you can get. So you see a guy doing 9 reps instead of 10 reps and you just let him do 9, that's a sellout, man. Like you're selling out for yourself instead of the team. You choose your comfort over what you know is good for the team, and that's selfish. And so that's why it's speak and act with urgency. So the communication piece of it plays into a lot of things that we do. And then our mantra for it is don't flinch. Like, you know what's right. Don't flinch. Say it. Like, I don't care if it hurts their feelings. I don't care if they, like, say it for the team. Like, that's your job. So I try to do that. I try to do that in my life all the time. But I try to make sure I'm consistent with it with our guys. And then the last one is thankful, which for us is show love is our behavior. And then get touches is our mantra. So, like, we count touches in practice and we chart them with some guys, and we like it's a reset for us for guys making a turnover or making a mistake. We got in trouble a bunch for it over COVID. Like, that was the year we won the state title. We got written up like 5 times because our guys wouldn't stop giving high fives. You're just gonna have to fire me, dog. We're doing that. And we're like, sure. I don't know what to tell you. We can put hand sanitizer on, but we are giving fives. So, that's it. Tough, passion, unified, thankful. We believe pretty strongly in it. And I will mm-hmm. say those are my values. Like those are my values. And I just ask, I help our guys individually find their values, but I don't ask that you take on our values. I just ask that you're willing to embrace them. Just like if I was taking a job somewhere, I would want to know what are your values. And if I don't align with those, if I can't believe in those values, I don't want to work there. And same thing with our basketball team. If those don't seem like valuable to you and will add value to your life, then don't play. You shouldn't play. Like, you should go do something that does add value to your life. So that's it. I'm off my soapbox.
No, it's good. I know that this was one that we're going to spend a lot of time on. And I love that you went into the teaching point too, but I would love to know. So say I'm in your program, and I may not be living one of these core values. Like, let's say that, you know, I'm not choosing extra work. What does that look like in you trying to create a different behavior for me? So I know that you're very into the psychological side. I read your blog almost every week, and you're consistently trying to find better ways to, I don't want to say manipulate, that's a bad one, to create better behaviors for people. So what would that look like for me? Let's say I'm not choosing extra work. I'm not fitting in that standpoint. What does the conversation look like?
Yeah, it would just be a conversation. That, I mean, that's the main thing. And I would just say, you know, like it doesn't have to be basketball. Like, let's say you're a baseball basketball kid, right? I've got 4 of those on our team right now. And so, you know, we got one kid that's a good basketball player, but wants to play college baseball. And he's been coming to Breakfast Club a few days a week, but he's not going to throw or hit at all. And so conversation would just be like, you know, Luke, what do you want to do? Like, what do you want to be great at? What are you trying to do with this high school experience? And mm-hmm. you know, he might say what he wants to do. And I'd say, okay, well, if you want to play varsity basketball, the truth is you're going to have to put in some work outside of practice because everyone else is, you're not going to be good enough to play, right? If you want to play college baseball, you better be getting swings in the winter, and you better be throwing in the winter, or you're not going to have a shot. And so I would fully, so then I would just try to help him make a schedule. So let's go. What do you want to do? Like, and we would sit down and try to figure out like, what days are you going to throw? I'm going to throw on Thursdays. Like baseball has weights before school on Thursdays. I could throw on Thursdays. All right. When are you going to hit? I don't know. Okay. Well, let's find a night where you can hit after school so we would go through it and just like that. And if he says, coach, I don't want to do any of that, then I would just say, okay, well, like that's your choice. I mean, like I'm not going to make you do it, but the truth is he's surrounded by so many guys that do it now. He'll do it. You either have to do it or you die out. Like you can't, you can't survive. So.
Right. Well, and that's the biggest thing I think for us dealing with teenagers is a lot of time they know exactly what to say to authority figures and they know how to put on a front, but they're not willing to do the work that they like. Let's say, for instance, I walk into our locker room today. Hey, how many of you guys want to play college baseball? You know, and like every hand in the room shoots up because they think that's what I want them to do. Right. But then you look at, okay, we have like we call it champions do extra. We have like an hour after practice on some days because we're limited to an hour and you see two people show up. So then it's like, okay, what you're saying is not lining up with what you're doing. And so the conversation is consistently changing with that too. So how, like, what does that look like for you with some of your other core values? Because toughness is one too. Like people, I think based on their circumstances, have a tendency to come in to our program tougher than others in some ways.
Yeah.
But I think it is a skill that can be developed. So let's say like you've got a kid, you use me for example, like every time I miss a shot, I am arms are slumped and I go palms up. Like, what does that conversation look like?
No, first of all, no showing palms. That's a rule in our program. I don't want to see any palms. Yeah. But for sure, like, so that's the one I fight the most, honestly, just because I think that's human nature and it's the times. It's the times for sure. 10 years ago, it wasn't as much. At Graham, where I coached before this, was a very rural country farm community, not as much. But where I am now, and for my first 3 years, I spent a lot of my time just pissed off. Like, these dudes are soft. They don't want to compete. That, you know, just all this negative talk to myself. And then I realized, like, what are you doing? Like, this is your opportunity. Like, this is my thing. Like, that. I'm good at this. Like, this is one of the best gifts I can give these guys is to help them understand how to attack something and how to maintain positive body language and how to be tough physically and mentally with what they're doing. And so when I flipped it like that and I looked at it as an opportunity, I just got significantly better at addressing it. So one of the biggest things for me is like, you got to be willing to fight for it every single day.
Right.
And you have to. And body language is a fight every day. And it is 5 burpees every day of practice. And I give them out numerous times every day. But with that, I have to make sure I got positive body language. And I catch myself reacting to a bad decision or a turnover or a bad call, right? And so I got to hold myself accountable to that too. So, the body language is like, one thing you got to do is you got to explain to them what it is. Like kids don't know how to sit in a meeting.
Right.
Like, come on now. You're sitting up, your chin's forward, you're leaning forward, you're making eye contact, you're giving acknowledgement that you're listening by nodding, you know, affirming. Like we've got to teach them what that looks like in a lot of different places. Like how are you getting under that 225 squat rack? Like you tippy toeing under there? Cause it's about to squash your ass. Like, you're like, okay, you got it, right? Maybe you fail. That's fine. But you ain't failing because you didn't get under it the right way. Right. So I think a lot of it is talking about it and making it a priority, making it something that is valuable. Like, just don't get away with it. No different than you wouldn't get away with not boxing out. Like, it's non-negotiable.
Yep. No, I'm with you. And it's exhausting at times, but that's why you have 4 core values and not 40, I'm assuming.
Yes. Yes, it is.
I love it. Yep.
I also think it's important that's another reason it's important that they're actually yours, because if those weren't mine, I wouldn't fight as much for them.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so I think that is significant.
Yeah. So last year, okay. So, this is one of those things that looking back, I was like, oh yeah, I'm glad we did that, but it was a very uncomfortable time. So we have a video system here. And this took me like several hours to kind of put all this together. But I was like, okay, this is not getting through of like what bad body language looks like. So I went through and I tried to remember, but I basically had to watch every single pitch of our first like several games and found every instance of where we went like palms up or slumped shoulders or like looking at the umpire, like all of these different things. And I put it on like, it ended up being like 1 minute long. But after that, the guys are like, holy crap, I look like such babies. And that was really good too, because then they saw it and they were like super embarrassed. Because I, you know, we do this as like a defense mechanism too of, you know, it's probably baked into our nature, like you talked about, of defensiveness. But until they saw it, they were like, oh yeah, like that's really bad. And I'm like, now you see what I'm looking at all the time. Why do you think I get upset? And they're like, yeah, now I get it. I thought that was really good for those, you know, it took a long time, but I think it hit the message really well.
Yeah. That's awesome. The only highlight clips that we make, like we make a highlight, you know, after each game, the only thing we mark highlights of is our core values. So like that's positive body language. That's choosing extra work. That's being unified. That's thankful. So like we kind of build that as the season goes of all the positives of that. And that's, we don't show like, there might be some positive body language after a dunk, but it's not like a highlight play that we're talking about. So that's good. I think seeing it is definitely a big deal for the kids now.
Right. And, you know, we talk about learning visually. I think that's a way to do it. But, you know, it's one thing to, like I said, make phrases on a wall. And you've mentioned several times they've got to be yours. And I love that about you. And so let's talk about, you know, ways that, so you mentioned several different aspects that you're looking for. What are some ways that you bake it into like the everyday? So say for instance, I watched this at Vanderbilt a couple years ago and they talk about touches. This was about when, you know, the Spurs were, I think it was the Spurs or the Celtics were coming out with like high fives and the importance behind that and the research. And I went and watched Vanderbilt baseball, play like do pregame or like an off day during our spring break trip. And after every single round that a guy was hitting, they all fist bumped. And I was like, that's interesting. So they would like almost tag the guy in to the next round. And then you keep talking about touches. And that was a way that I was like, okay, we could bake it in like that. Or like now, whenever we break down, we make sure everybody like gives everybody else nucks. And the kids have started to own that too. But I would love to hear how you take your core values and then bake them into the everyday rather than, you know, you hold them accountable to some of the stuff. But what are some ways that you teach through the core values with culture on a daily basis?
Yeah. So the toughness one is pretty simple. I mean, it's just every time you face adversity is really the main time you're looking for that positive body language. Like, how are you going to respond to adversity? So we spend a little time at the beginning of the year. We actually did it last week, but we identified a failure recovery system. So like when you screw up, what are you doing? I got this from Sue Enquist, who was the softball coach at UCLA.
Station 7, I think she called it.
Yes. But we have like an F it button on our shoulder where we'll hit. And so we talk through that. We talk about your strong voice and your weak voice and the goal of always getting back to that strong voice. Cause that's really the essence of toughness, right? Is to get to the positive body language. You gotta be telling yourself positive stuff. You gotta be in that positive mindset. And so we talked about helping yourself reset with that. And then how do you help teammates reset with it? Because one of the things we say is you can't be tough alone, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, like if I recognize that my teammate is down, like it's my responsibility to go like bring him back to present as quickly as I can. So when we talk about that, then we try to apply that as often as we can in practice. And we'll just look at guys like hit your button, you know, or, you know, we'll, like get your chin up, head up, no palms, you know, we'll be constantly reminding them of that. For passionate, a lot of it's is our breakfast club. We just talk about, you know, getting your work in at breakfast club, making sure you're going there. The other thing we talk about with that is like our pace of practice. Like we can steal inches by getting to our next station and starting it, you know, quicker than most people would, or be the first group to start. We rotate in the weight room, be the first group to have the weight on and start benching, right? Or whatever it may be. So the speed of our rotation, the pace of practice, is something that our guys and we connect to passionate. Unified, we do a couple of different things with Unified, but one of them is just connecting things to like something as simple as jogging back on defense. Jogging back on defense isn't lazy for us. That's selfish, because it's, you're not showing the urgency that that possession matters to your teammates and to our team. And so I think a lot of it for Unified is like, how do you frame it? And so we try to frame it through Unified or selfish. What is the act? Like if you're not going to like really go screen for that guy, like you're just going to go act like you're screening. That's selfish. That's not Unified. That's not acting with urgency, right? You're not trying to get him open. So we point to the purpose and the intent of actions, with Unified. Thankful is probably the one we've got the most like specific activities around. I think it's really important. And I think it kind of bleeds over into a lot of other stuff, but like at the end of our practice, we do a debrief every practice. And so that is, I got this from the Blue Angels, but like you say, what'd you do well? What do you need to do better? And how are you going to fix it? So what'd you do well? What do you need to do better? How are you going to fix it? Who did you like that day? So it gives you a chance to point out somebody else, and then some expression of appreciation for being there. So our guys will usually just dap each other up, say, I love you. They'll give a hug at the end. But the Blue Angels always say, glad to be here. Like that was their thing. So that debrief is something we do after every game. We have something we call moments of greatness.
Okay.
And so that is an opportunity for everybody goes around and says like something that someone else did that week leading up to the game or in the game that really represented our core values well. So it's always core value based. It's not like, oh, he had 36 points or something like that. It's, Andrew got me water coming to the bench. You know, he hadn't played the whole game, but he had water ready for me when I was coming to the bench during that timeout in the fourth quarter. Uh-huh. Right, he was thinking of him of somebody else other than himself.
Sure.
And so we go around. That's been really cool, because what usually happens is like your best players, your players that get all the recognition, now they're reinforcing those roles of guys that aren't getting any praise publicly, but they know that they're appreciated by those guys that are playing the minutes in the game and stuff. So that's turned into a really positive thing for us.
Yeah. And if you don't mind, I'd love to stick on the topic of roles, because you talked about, making sure that they understand that their role is still important, even though they're not getting the minutes that other guys are. How do you, that's a great example. Do you have any more? Is there any that come from you when you have to have those hard conversations about the guy being like the eighth guy on the team and not getting to play as much as, you're number one?
Yeah. So we got a big process for to identify roles, and we are as blunt as you don't shoot threes, you do shoot threes. Like we don't leave any kind of like any room to wiggle on it. But here's how we do it. We're doing it this week. Actually, we're finishing it up today, but we are talking, we do strengths and weaknesses. So we go around, everybody on the team, including the coaches, goes around and gives two strengths and one weakness for each player. So let's say we're doing me. So everybody will go around and give my two strengths, what they think my strengths are, like what's the best thing that I bring to the table for this team, right? And then I'll listen to them. I'll take notes as they're talking about me. I'll say, okay, well, I heard this, 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 and this. What I had for myself was this. And what we're looking for there is like, do those things match? Are those things even remotely close to lining up? Because if everybody says that you're a great rebounder and defensive guy, and you say you're a great shooter, then we got to do some work, right? Like stuff's got to match. Probably those 15 probably ain't wrong. You're probably the one that's wrong. We do that. And then we come back around and we say all my weaknesses, right? What do I get better at? Our guys are awesome at this. They're blunt. We have coaches come in and observe practice for these sometimes. And they're like, I can't believe those guys said that stuff. And it's like, just say like, whatever your weakness is. And I'm taking notes on what my weaknesses are. Say, okay, this is what I heard. This is what I had for myself. And then after everybody goes, we come back and we say, okay, based on my strengths and weaknesses, this is what I think my role for this team is. And I would present what I think my primary role and my two secondary roles are. My primary role is very rarely basketball related. Like, it's probably not rebounding, scoring. It's probably like something that I can give the team every single day. Because the way I explain it is like sick, dead, dying, your primary role you've got to do. Like, we can't operate if you don't do your primary role. Like, that's your biggest contribution to this team, right? And so it might be bring an edge. It might be positive energy. It might be picking guys up, it, you know, whatever it is. So I present that. And then my secondary roles are probably basketball related. Those are like, I need to run the floor and I need to really pressure the ball on defense, right? And I present those to the team and the team says, yeah, I like that. I think that's you. I think that's how you can help us the most. Or they say, I think rebounding needs to be up there for you. And then we have a conversation about it. Right. We get done. Okay. This is your primary role. These are your two secondary roles. Good. Good. Okay. And then we go to the next person.
That's interesting. So, I've never heard anybody do that.
Yeah. And when we get done with it, like, it's like our guys have a feeling like what they do and what they're going to give to the team is valuable, because like, I think of roles, people think of roles as like this limiting thing when they're not. Like, they are empowering. We're telling you how you can most contribute to the team, like give the most to the team. So like, you might want to shoot threes, but that doesn't help our team. Like, and so you're not going to play as much if you think you have to shoot threes. If you rebound and play defense and screen, you'll play a lot and you'll like be a big contributor to this group. Or like, you might be a practice guy. Like, how are you going to contribute the most to the team as that guy that gets that other guy ready? And like, that's the stuff where now they hear that's how valuable that is to the rest of the team. And then they're getting that reinforced with those moments of greatness, you know, and things like that. The year we won the state, we had a gold squad, which was our scout group. We had a kid in practice that like the Ohio's Division I player of the year was on the team that we were playing. And the kid in practice was better than him every day of practice than when we played him. Like, he had 6 points against us. We completely dominated like that aspect of the game. And it was because that kid, and that everybody in our locker room said it after that game, like, moment of greatness. Max was incredible this week in practice. He was better than the guy we played on Saturday. Right. Like, that's huge for a kid to hear and to get him to buy into a role. And then it feeds off. Everybody else thinks it's important.
Absolutely. No, for sure. And, you know, thinking about that too, is they're hearing it from their teammates and not just from the coaching staff. Cause sometimes there's a divide too of like, okay, coach doesn't like me or whatever, you know, which is stupid. Or it's like us versus them type thing. But when they're hearing it from their peers, once they get over that initial probably shock of like, oh, like, I have weaknesses and these guys are calling me out about it, then it's actually a really good exercise. I'm sure you ran into that, which is why you keep doing it.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome. It takes some vulnerability and trust, but it's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Right. Which is something teenagers aren't super good at either.
Right. Right.
Opportunities for improvement. Yeah. You know, let's talk about that too, because, you know, we're both high school coaches, so inevitably we're going to have, I don't want to say parent issues, but there are things that you probably have to deal with today that you didn't have to deal with, you know, 20 years ago with social media and then the easy access to email. Parents are really taking ownership of their kids' careers, which can be a good thing too. So I don't want to say this is a completely bad thing, but how do you make sure that, you know, what's best for the team, which is your job, and what's best for their player are starting to line up? Because I think that's where we get into trouble, is because we're trying to coach the team, do what's best for the team, and parents are trying to do what's best for their kid, which out of a loving way, I hope that they're doing that. But sometimes those things don't line up. So give us your best advice on, you know, if we're dealing with parent issues, or we want to head those off, or ways that we can include and be inclusive with parents, like, any parent advice you've got, I would love to hear.
Well, the first one is like the core value aspect of it makes a big deal, because I can, like, when the core values are central to what I'm doing, I mean, I really do tell parents, like, if you don't want them to be more tough, more passionate, more unified, and more thankful, then this probably isn't the right place. And so when I come back to those during a meeting, like, they get it, right? And every parent's going to, they're not very many people are going to be like, yeah, I don't want my kid to be more passionate or be more unified, right? So most of them can support that side of it. So you can kind of at least start off on the same foot. probably the best parenting, dealing with parents advice I can give is to be, be assertive and be, I can't think of the word. Don't react, be proactive. Mm-hmm. That's the word I was sure. looking for.
Yeah,
be great. Proactive as often as you can. So we all kind of sniff out like, this kid doesn't seem happy. Like he seems frustrated. Something like we all feel that. And I still do it sometimes. And I just like, we'll just see how it goes. We'll see. The best situations I've dealt with, as soon as I sniff it out, I just call a parent, bring the parent in, talk to the kid, bring him in. Like, let's talk. Because now it's on my terms instead of their terms.
Sure.
And so my message with parents is always the same. Like, we both want the same thing. Like, I really do want what's best for him. I really do. And, you know, what I've done with our kids in the past, like I haven't taken advantage of kids. I haven't done any of that stuff. So that I think it's believable. Right. And then like, we just might not agree on the same path, which mm-hmm. is okay. That's okay. And I understand that. And you can disagree with me and I can disagree with you. And there's nothing wrong with that. And as we can talk through it, you know, I'm the coach of the team. And so it's going to be my decision at the end, but I actually have quite a few parent meetings and I don't mind them anymore, but okay. I also don't feel threatened by them anymore
right.
because I know it's still my choice. I understand that the parents really just want what's best for their kid. They think that's playing time, obviously, or at bats or whatever you want to say. Like, and that's okay. Like I had a parent a few years ago, just, man, you just got to throw him a bone. You got to give him a chance. You got to give him some hope. I was like, he's not getting a bone until he practices hard. That's not okay. I understand what you're saying and I get it. I will talk to him. I will deal hope to him as much as I can, but he's going to have to practice harder. He's not playing. That's it. I understand what you're saying. We both want what's best for him. You think what's best for him is me giving him playing time. I think what's best for him is him to understand that that's got to be earned. And so.
Yeah, that's good. No, I like that. It's hard to argue with that.
The proactive is a big deal because sometimes when they come in on your, like you got you on your heels where they're coming at you, you just kind of like got to take it for a little bit and then kind of try to get your feet back under you. But it's sure. so much better when you can initiate it because it also, I think it also shows that you really do care about their kid.
Right.
You're talking to them before they even knew there was a problem.
Right. For sure. So I've got a couple quick hitters for you. And then, you know, we'll let it roll. But the first one is I would love to know, and this is, again, for team building stuff, what is your favorite team building activity that you guys do? And you may have already mentioned it, but I would love to for you to dig deeper into because I want to steal as much from you that I can.
We do a ton of stuff. We have skull session before every practice, and our skull sessions are always based on our core values, or unless we're into the season, we'll watch some film during that time. But we've got a couple. Like I almost always go back to building trust. I think anytime your team starts struggling, at least for me, my experience has been there's some void in trust. A guy's not doing something because he doesn't trust me. He's not playing as hard as he can because he doesn't trust the guys that he's playing with. I feel like the trust factor, we go back to Lencioni's Five Dysfunctions of a Team a lot, which I think is a great book and model for building a team. So if we're trying to build trust, I think there's three ways you do that. You laugh together, you cry together, and you suffer together. I think those are when trust is built the most. And so suffering together is really easy. We do that every day in practice, and I'm pretty good at putting you in those situations. So welcome to the team.
Mm-hmm.
Laughing together, they do a lot like with team dinners and things like that. We also do some improv as some of our just to – really, I want guys to be willing to laugh at themselves because I think that shows a level of humility. And so we do improv, like I give you like a little skit and we act it out, or there's a bunch of different games that you can find. And so we do some of those. Now, crying together with 15 to 17 year old high school boys isn't the easiest thing, but one of the best exercises we do is called Your 68 Ball. And it's named after Jaromir Jagr, the great hockey player. He wore number 68 in honor of his grandpa who died in the war of 1968. And so we take a basketball and we pass it around. We always do this before our first game, pass it around the locker room, and everybody writes on the basketball the name of the person they want to honor with the way they play. And so it's not necessarily like, who do you like the best? It's like, if they could look down on you and watch how you go about practice, how you treat people in the locker room, how you compete, like, who do you really want to honor with that? Who do you really want to be proud of you for the way you go about doing that? And we always have guys cry when they're talking about their grandpa, or I'll cry when I talk about my family. And so, like, then that ball goes with us to every game. And our guys, like, that's become a ritual before all of our games. The guys will go out, warm up, and they come back in the locker room, and that's the last thing they read. One of our guys will read all the names off the ball, which I think is a great reminder of, like, what we're really doing. Like, we're not really going out to win a basketball game. Like, go honor those people that just do it the right way, and we'll probably win. If we won't win, we can go get ice cream and be happy about the way we did it, you know? That's like the – we don't give a whole lot of awards, but that's the one thing that we give to our, like, our captain or our guy. We name captains after the season. So our guy that kind of was our leader, he gets our Your 68 ball after the season. So it's a good one. It's a good one.
No, that is great. You know, with that, the next one I've got is more, you know, personal growth. So what is the latest thing that you've learned that's made you better at your job?
You know, I thought about this one a little bit. I wrote about in my blog today, I wrote about abundance versus scarcity. And that's been, I've just thought about that a lot recently. Kenny Smith on one of the NBA shows, he said, there's no GOAT. There's no greatest of all time. There's just greatness. I really like that. I think we operate in such a world of scarcity. Like, I got to get mine. And it's really not like that. Like, the really good teams, they're not like that at all. There's an abundance. There's so much. There's so much recognition. There's so much love. There's so much, you know, like that it's just like overwhelming for people. So that's one. The other thing, like, that's just really applicable is the difference between a performance mindset and a practice mindset. Yep. And I just think about this with kids a lot. Like, I think a lot of times when kids struggle to perform, they're stuck in that practice mindset where they think they got to get it right. And really, man, in performance, we just say, let it rip. Like, just let it rip. Like, if whatever happens, just let it rip. If it ain't what we want, we'll go back and practice it again. But I think that's an important thing. I heard a quote one time, like, the archer shooting his bow, you know, the archer's responsibility is just to shoot the arrow straight. Just shoot it straight. Like, and just whatever hits, it hits. Like, but your job, shoot it straight when you're in that performance mindset.
I love that. Well, that's all I've got for you today, and I want to be the first to say thank you so much for spending some time with us today and getting to talk to a bunch of baseball coaches as a basketball coach and giving so much, you know, application to just head coaching in general and just being a leader. And I have appreciated that about you, and I have even more of a deeper appreciation for you today. But I've got two things for you. Number one, is there anything else that you'd like to talk about? And anything that we didn't touch on, tell our guests now. And number two, I wanted to say, keep chopping before you did. So,
hey, let's go, coach. Let's go. You know, the one thing I did think about, like, in terms of, you said, implementing the core values and stuff, we one of the things that I think is cool that we do is we don't call any fouls. We don't have any out of bounds. We don't have any jump balls in our practices. And I get some ridicule for that. But what our guys are not is soft. And so, like, jump ball, two guys have it. Somebody will come up with it eventually. It might take 3 minutes, but somebody's coming up with the ball. Fouls, we won't respond to them in a game because we don't respond to them in practice because they don't get called. And so that's one area of our core values that I think has, like, an immediate transition to the floor. But I don't have anything else. I really appreciate the opportunity to share with you. I could rant about this stuff forever. I'm grateful for all the people I've learned from and continue to learn from, and, you know, look forward to digging into some of the Ahead of the Curve podcasts, coach.
Thank you so much for listening to Ahead of the Curve. If you would do us a huge favor, leave a rating or review wherever you are listening. And if you enjoyed this episode, share it with someone and tag us on social media. That would help us so much with growing the show and helping others to stay ahead of the curve.